dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. We have been focusing intensively for some time now, as has our nation, on Syria as one of the important fronts in the battle space of the war for the free world. Very, very important developments in the space of the past 24 hours with respect to what has likely become of the president's initiative to strike Syria, and to visit about that and kind of the larger argument the president has been making for such an action is our first guest. He is the Honorable, and I mean that quite literally, Douglas J. Feith, former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy in the George W. Bush administration, currently a senior fellow and director of the Center for National Security Strategies at the Hudson Institute, and the author of the really quite monumental study of an important period in our history entitled War and Decision: Inside the Pentagon at the Dawn of the War on Terrorism. Doug Feith, an old friend and colleague, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us.
Glad to be with you.
You and I spent some time a while back thrashing around about a treaty known as the Chemical Weapons Convention. It was, we were told, going to rid the world of chemical weapons. It turns out that some countries, like Syria, did not sign on to the treaty. Others did, but like Syria, I think, have retained chemical weapons stockpiles. And I wanted to just sort of ask you to illuminate for us, if you would, where you think we are now that Russia and Syria have apparently arrived at some sort of agreement and principle about putting the stockpile that, well, Bashar Assad didn't acknowledge he had until yesterday, I guess, under international control. Is that likely to happen? And what challenges are associated with trying to do it?
Well, I think the biggest challenge is the assumption that a criminal regime will behave like a well-intentioned, law-abiding citizen of the world. And I think this is the folly that underlies a lot of the multilateral approach to arms control. It's the assumption that countries that are not law-abiding or law-respecting can join the civilized world in a common effort to do something good. When you do have criminal regimes, and the idea that the criminals sit down with the police and all pretend to be interested in upholding the law is really a folly.
One of the arguments here is that this would bring the Syrian regime into conformity with the international norm, which not only governs, as I say, this idea that we would ban all of these chemical weapons, but we certainly would prohibit their use, something that Syria actually did endorse in the 1925 Geneva Protocol banning the use of chemical weapons. Talk a little bit about this international norm business, Douglas Feith, and the argument that it not only exists, point one, but point two, we have a responsibility to enforce it.
Well, the term international norm is a somewhat vague term, and it's vague because what we refer to as international law is if it's law at all, it's a species of law that is a lot weaker than domestic law. Domestic law is generally backed by the power of a government which can enforce it. International law is not backed in general by an authority that can definitively say what the law is, and it's not backed by a police power that can enforce the law. And so part of the problem with talking about international law is that a lot of people talk about it as if it were like domestic law, you know, clear, ascertainable, and enforceable, when it's not. And then into that debate, people introduce this concept of a norm, which is a way of saying that a lot of, in many cases, well-intentioned people would like to see something be like a law in international affairs, but it's not really a law, so they call it a norm. And it's a very vague concept. And, you know, very often you get a number of law professors basically getting together and agreeing amongst themselves that it'd be nice if the whole world did something the way they believe they should do it. And then they start referring to their own preference as a norm, implying that it's somehow close to being a law that really is obligatory for governments around the world. And the whole thing is very vague and kind of presumptuous.
Well, I get that. Let me ask you to drill down, though, Doug Feith, if you would, on something that, you know, you had to contend with, I think, during your time as the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy in the George W. Bush administration, namely this notion that the United States military must be put in the service of international law or international norms, even more vague, to enforce where no other mechanism exists to do that. What do you make of that argument? And does it imply both a likelihood we will wind up squandering our military on matters that don't govern or bear directly on our national interests, and that it might impinge upon our sovereignty as well?
Well, I think in general it's more useful to think about a lot of these issues as a matter of national interest rather than as a matter of international law and international legal obligations. Because in many cases, the so-called legal obligations are very vague, and it's not clear that they're obligations at all. And I mean, I've been unhappy that President Obama has talked about the Syria case from the point of view of an American obligation to uphold the 1925 Geneva Protocol on chemical weapons. I agree with people in the administration when they say that we have an interest in shoring up the, and I would refer to it by a non-legal term like taboo, that generally exists as a matter of international politics against the use of chemical weapons. It would be a good thing if nobody used chemical weapons. And there is generally a taboo. And I think it's in the world's interest and it's in America's interest that that taboo be strengthened. And so I think that hitting Syria to impose a severe price on the Assad regime for using chemical weapons is something that would be in our interest if it were done right. The problem that I have is that every time you hear the president and his top advisors talk about it, they suggest that they're thinking about it, I think, in a way that is not clear. And what they're proposing to do about it is not the right way to impose a serious penalty on the Assad regime. And I'm particularly unhappy about the remark that Secretary Kerry made yesterday in trying to persuade Europeans to go along with us. He was saying what we're going to be doing in Syria is incredibly small or unbelievably small. And he's trying to assure the Europeans, but what it suggests is the action that we would take in Syria would be so small that it wouldn't really influence or severely punish the Assad regime and would allow the Assad regime to say that they stood up to America, survived an attack, and are stronger for it. And so at the end of the day, we might wind up accomplishing the opposite of our intended effect, which would be to strengthen rather than weaken the Assad regime.
This is one of many possible ways in which that outcome may be achieved, I'm afraid, Douglas Feith. And I guess who knows, maybe John Kerry is going to be proven absolutely right. It will be unbelievably small because it won't happen at all as a result of the new gambit between the Russians and the Syrians professing to turn over control of their the Assad regime's chemical weapons. We'll follow this, as I know you will, Doug Feith, closely. I hope you'll come back to us and share your further insights with us in the future. In the meantime, keep up the good work at the Hudson Institute, and thank you for taking the time to join us today. Next up, we'll speak with Michael Auslan of the AEI about both Syria and Asia. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.